could that are involved in this area. My name is Kent Jones, and I'm a state engineer from the state of Utah. And I wanted to be here tonight as we talk about this. So you've got some staff member here that work with me. Teresa Wilhelmson is our assistant state engineer for our applications and records. We're all kind of involved in this process. Mike Drake is our regional engineer for the responsible for this area. Kyle Trumbo is an assistant regional engineer, and Dorley Cannon is our executive master. She's actually going to be recording the proceedings tonight as we talk. We'll try to get an audio record of what's happening here. And we're going to have that record available on our website, and we'll have the PowerPoint available on our website that you can go in and look at that. If you have questions about these, so you don't probably have to write everything down that you, but it will be there and available. We wanted to have a meeting. We've been talking in the office about some things that have happened in the Garth Ranch areas, about groundwater protection steps that we've taken to help protect existing rights. One of the responsibilities that are given to me by statute is that before I approve any kind of an application in the state, I have to make sure that there's water available for appropriation, and that the new appropriation or the new use of water does not impair the rights of others. We had a tough time in Garth Ranch area because we had some really old 1800s vintage water rights that were in the creek and down at the mouth of the canyon. But we really had to do things to protect. We had to make some decisions based on those rights, and we had to put some real restrictions on some of the properties associated with Garth Ranch about how much water, and it's really inside use only that we went to. We've had some things happen recently in the last year and a half, and maybe even the last 6 months critically, that some changes had happened. And we thought, well, before we make any kind of a decision or change in policy, we wanted to get the people involved in some type of a public meeting so we can talk about it and get some comments and just review what we've talked about before we make any modifications to that policy. Because I know there's a considerable investment that people make in these lots, and when you get the happy news that, oh yeah, you can use water, but you can only use it inside and don't dare take it outside because you might hurt somebody, it's not really great news sometimes to hear that. Sometimes you just don't want to mow your lawn, and it's probably okay. But we're trying to work at some things. Mike is going to give us a presentation this evening about the policy, about what we found out, and about what we're considering. We would like to just open it up to questions and just talk about what we're telling you, and if you have any questions that you have concerning that, we're happy to talk about. And then Mike will tell you about the comment period and some different things that we're going to do. So that's really all I'm going to talk about right now, Mike, and I'll just turn it over to you, and then we'll just go through a discussion here. So if you have questions as we go through, I think,
yeah, we'll start
ask as we go through and make sure
if there's something that I put on one of the slides and what we're talking about you don't understand, please stop us. We can chat about it. But there we'll have an extended period of time to ask questions and give your comments. That's really what we're looking for here. So let's see. First slide, Kyle. Kind of some of the few other things we're going to look at. We're going to cover the background of the policy, and Kent is talking a little bit about this, and we're going to go into why we're looking at possibly updating this policy, and we'll go into what the policy that we're proposing is, and talk about that in some detail. We'll talk about the process, and then, like I said, we'll have some questions at the end, a chance for you guys to ask questions. And change that. So the policy was implemented back in 1993, I believe, and you guys probably might have some of the better chronology than I do, but I believe this is about when the development was going in. At the time, there was a fear that all of these wells going in and pumping water would impair some of these more senior water rights that go back in the 1800s. And so the state engineer saw fit at that time to implement the policy that is currently in place. One of the reasons, the water right that we were protecting, that we were mainly concerned about, was with water right 35-9017. The owner of record at that time was Levitt Enterprises, and permit on that was 1885. So that kind of gives you an idea of the water right that, that we were trying to protect.
Mike, that was a surface.
It was a surface.
At the mouth of the canyon.
Yeah, it was, that's a right under the Weaver River Decree that was listed there. So that's the primary right. There are clearly other rights as you go further out, but the focus of the policy was to make sure that these wells didn't impair that more senior water right. So the policy as it was implemented back then restricted some lots to only indoor domestic use. That's that 0.45 acre feet. That's the diversion number that we use that is an average use for a house. And so those are the lots that that were held to that. The other lots were held to 1 acre foot at a maximum, but they could have outside irrigation and stock watering. The main differentiation between these two areas was whether that lot could be seen to be draining into, I think it's called Indian Creek, right? Is that what it's called? It's listed on maps as Indian Hollow. And this map shows the result of that policy. So the lots in blue were limited to 1 acre foot, and the lots in purple were limited to indoor use only. And you can also see the location of the water right 35-9017, the water right that we were seeking to protect there. Okay, so reasons for the update is we haven't been presented with any impairment. There has been any impairment of this water right. These wells, as we've seen them develop and be drilled and constructed, they go quite deep. It seems like most of them are in the 500 foot depth, and they go into fractured volcanic rocks, and being that deep, we don't see that there's a likely to be a connection between these wells and the surface source. And then maybe the biggest aspect is that in the last few months we've had a change application approved on Water Right 35-9017 that takes out water right and instead of taking it from the surface proposes to drill a well and it's for a development that's being I guess pursued with at the bottom of Indian Hollow. And whereas that one is now, they're proposing to take that water out of the ground. We're not likely to see that impairment from these wells.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
Is that going to be at all affected, that development, by the zoning changes that Summit County's proposing?
That I don't know. What I don't follow the zoning changes.
Well, they're changing the ag. So like for Ag 40, Ag 80, they're changing the density.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the zoning's done a lot of stuff right now.
Are they? Mm-hmm. Relating to this subdivision?
We don't know.
We don't know. Okay. It's just, it's all of Summit County.
Okay.
Well, it spurred it.
So I don't know. It's not something we've considered in this policy. And certainly that's one reason we invited Summit County to this is if they had some input that might affect what policy we take. If they have some interest, they'll provide us with that input through this the comment period that I'm going to talk about.
So this new subdivision, they get two wells. What did that last slide say? How much water are they going to take from
area,
from the Garf Ranch?
I don't remember the exact numbers. I know there has been the one that was approved on 9017 was in the order of 20 acre feet, but it didn't cover the entire development. And they currently have a change application in our office based on Beaver and Shingle Creek shares to provide another chunk of water for that development.
To drill more wells.
What's that?
To drill more wells.
But still for the two that were proposed. And what was that, sorry?
How big is the area?
that is, that they're developing?
They're wanting to develop.
Good question, I don't know.
It's probably about a section.
This water is based on 10 acres of irrigation, that's what was under irrigation as part of the Weaver River decree, and so I don't know if that land then became the subdivision. It's kind of a land use question, and I don't know the ins and outs of the development.
Yeah, it's not in the Garf frontages, it's below it.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Yeah, this is outside and below.
It's on a hill.
Yeah. So, I don't know, I've seen some mapping of it, and I know some of the parceling is available on our mapping, but we can maybe pull that from my tablet afterwards and look it out. But it may or may not be this week too, it depends on what they've recorded out there. Anything else?
Well, it's more why what it spurred, I see this is what spurred you guys' changes in the...
Yeah. The one well, there is one, I'll go back to now. There is one map that's fairly close to the historic surface point inversion. They drilled a well pretty close to here. The second well that they're proposing is across the highway, and there's a water company down here to the south called Deep Springs. And their application contemplated possibly combining the two and making it into a small municipal water supplier, basically, is what they were proposing. And the application that's currently out in their office is contemplating the same thing.
So is that green water tank that's on the hill, is that Levitt's water, or what is that water? Or is that green tank?
You know what that is, Scott? The green water tank?
There's some Beaver Creek in it, but there's quite a bit of Weaver Basin also, just Weaver Basin.
It's actually owned by the Garfs.
Oh, it's the Garfs? Okay.
Yeah, they still do.
Okay. Okay, on to the proposed policy. This is what we're proposing to do. We still see that there is some need for caution, but perhaps not as much as there has been up till now. So what we're proposing, and we think this is probably the best use of the water and probably fits this locale, is exchange applications will be limited to 1 acre feet, but there will be no type of use restrictions. And so you'd be able to do irrigation, you'd be able to do stock watering. We think there's still a need to be a little cautious, and so we don't want lot owners within this area to be filing for 20 1 acre foot exchanges. If you do want to, if an applicant wants to get additional water, we would propose that we get 1 acre foot, we submit a proof of beneficial use or affidavit of beneficial use, and then we file for a new one, and then file a proof on that one some years later. So just working in that, getting 1 acre foot at a time if you want to have more irrigation or more water uses up there. As everything, exchange applications will be reviewed on their own merits. There is always possibility for issues to come up, and so we would evaluate them as we would any other exchange application. Water users that have already have limited exchanges would be permitted to file an exchange, either replace an exchange application to then add irrigation onto their water right, or to file a second one to use the second, the 0.5 acre feet of their water right. As we are ever, we'll monitor the effect of this policy, and our primary goal is to make sure that we're not impairing the rights of senior water right holders.
So, as the senior water right holder changes the use of their water right, do they stay senior? I mean, it seems to me like if their initial water right was for surface and now it's for well, there shouldn't be considered as senior as it was before.
It's a bit of a loaded question because I think the way you view it, and correct me if I say anything wrong here, is in that some ways, yes, they will take on kind of a junior position, but when we consider the water right as it relates to the basin of a whole, a large area, that earlier priority date will still apply. But for example, if someone were, if you were to drill a well, and you know, one of these exchange applications, and then they were to come and 10 feet away drill their well later, and clearly they would impair, they're pulling a lot of water out. If that were to impair you, then that is a case where we would look at the when that change application was filed, when they moved that water right into the well. Is that correct?
So any change you make to a water right has a priority associated with whatever that change is. Okay. And so if they, just like Mike is saying, if they go in and put a well in now, they hold the underlying right, or the base priority right. If we have to do a whole basin-wide restriction, they still have that base right. But if they start pumping and they affect people who have existing wells, because they went in, they'll have the priority of the date that well went in, yeah. And that right, and then we just have to work out any kind of interference issues. Yes, sir.
So we kind of call it local interference when a earlier priority water right can affect a more junior water right from that local interference point of view. So
how did you figure out if there was more water up there? Did you read everyone's well meter? Like what? Kind of, what do you use as a guide point?
Well, there has been a study of the entire valley back in the early 2000s since this policy was implemented that gave us a lot more information than we had in the mid 90s about this valley, about those hills, and what type of geology that we're drilling into with those wells. And that's where we have this additional information that they're volcanics, it's fractured, and so it's very possible that additional development in this area might be limited by the production of the wells, and maybe that's one thing that we would be interested in hearing from all of you is the production of any of the wells that have been drilled. And it's very possible that we have several areas that are into this same formation, more so up in Nawanship, that are it's not so fractured as it is up here, and they'll drill holes and then it'll come out completely dry. And this area seems to produce some water. You have to go quite deep for it, but it does produce some water because of the fracturing in the rocks.
So if this development where you're talking about this weather place, if they hadn't applied for this exchange difference, would we still not be able to get our full acre of water?
I don't know. It's a good question. I guess I don't. It's hard.
Because I had this discussion with you.
I know, and the answer was is as long as that water right is staying there, it's going to be hard to change it. I think is what I told you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. We had a policy in place that was based on protecting existing rights, and as long as those rights are dependent upon that existing source and that stream flow, we didn't see any reason to change the policies. That we made a decision, that's what we're going to protect, and we made our best decision about how we can protect that. With the approval of the change application now, what's made the big difference is we don't have to protect that anymore. And so if wells are starting to take water away from that surface flow, it's not going to impact their ability to use it, because now they've now moved their water to a well, and they'll have to get their water out of a well. So that's what's made the big difference. We don't know that there's any more water up there than anything. Every time you drill a well, it's still a risk to go down and try to find it. Have any of you drilled wells up there? Do you get owners of wells? What are your wells like?
Ours is 553 feet deep.
Wow.
And they just drilled that last year, right?
Yeah, in August we drilled it.
What's the production out of your well?
We don't 200. We haven't. Yeah, there are other things going on. I think it was 200. What's the unit of measure I'm looking for?
I think
it's
100 gallon per minute.
Yeah.
Minute.
That's
100 gallon a minute. It's a pretty good.
That's not bad.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's 200.
The last story is about 10 gallons a minute.
Yeah.
Some of the well logs I saw were more limited, but it might be. You have a pretty deep well.
Yeah.
A lot of them I saw didn't quite touch 300, but I saw some that were getting down into the 500.
Yeah, and I think our well driller said that water started coming around 3, but he wanted to find that.
Yeah, there's a lot of 600 and 500.
Yeah. And I think it's you're extending that length that you have, the number of fractures that are feeding your well. when you're going that deep. Interesting. Anyone else? Any other experiences?
I went through all of the properties up there for 25 properties. It went anywhere from 300 to up to 700, mm-hmm. which is average about 500.
Yeah.
Well, is it right that the water table is just a foot or two below surface level here in the valley?
Yeah. I mean,
so you kind of look out at the valley and
there's not often you can walk across this valley and come out dry.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very wet as you go across it. So, yeah. And that kind of gets to where we don't have as much concern with this water right, this 9017, where it's located much further down than many of the Garf Ranch lot owners are. You know, those wells are all up on the hills, and you got to go 200-300 feet just to get down to the elevation of the valley floor. And so this well that they're proposing or that they drilled starts out pretty low. And so in the depth that it goes, it's even significantly deeper than all of these wells that are up in the hills. So we're not expecting that there's a high likelihood of interference between these wells and the it's Indian Hollow LLC is the water owner of that.
But is anybody here representing that new development? Yeah, we sent notices to them. Are those some that came back?
I'm sorry, I was responding to a text. I'm here if there's any questions.
Oh, okay.
Oh, with Indian Hollow LLC?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. And we want to make sure we're representing everything accurately, too, as far as what you guys are doing. But you see there's a need to kind of look at some additional things now. So.
One thing to note, if this policy goes through, is clearly this is on a policy on exchange applications, and so if you're filing for more, you're going to have to contact Weber Basin and get another contract to expand your water right if that's what you're wanting to do to get another exchange application. So still subject to that. So make sure you start your process there. So as far as the policy adoption process, we're gonna have a 30-day comment period, so that's until April 1st of 2018, and we'll evaluate the comments and then we'll implement a policy. That policy will be posted to our policy pages, and it'll also be posted to the announcement of this meeting that will be maintained on our webpage, and that's at waterrights.utah.gov. If you'd like to submit a comment, you can either do that to our general email address, which is down there at the bottom, waterrights@utah.gov, or you can send it by mail to our PO box, and you can see that right there, and we'll leave this up for a while. But that is, that's all, that's the end of the presentation, that's what we wanted to present to you, and we will take questions from anyone, or if you'd like to make comments right now, we can do that as well. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
How do you want these comments to come in? Should we have them flagged for Garf Ranches, or?
Yeah, so we would like to have you put attention on Garf Ranch exchange policy, yeah. And if you send an email, it's best if you put in the subject line that as well. That way our people know where to send it, and we'll talk with people that review those and make sure that they know what to do with that. And as Ken said at the beginning, tomorrow we'll have this presentation on that webpage, on our webpage, and the recording and the attendance roll and.
So until the actual decision has been finalized, do we not apply to use the full acre water? How's that?
What would you prefer? We actually have several exchange applications in right now that are requesting contrary to the current policy. And we're holding those pending the outcome of this process that we're in the midst of right now. I wouldn't be averse to it, but I you know, I...
Okay, there's a couple things to consider. One, we might get some comments in the 30-day time period that gives us reason to believe maybe we shouldn't do this. But we should just keep it tight and not move ahead.
Yeah.
And so if you go ahead and file a new exchange application, you're spending $150 for an application. We're not changing. But we had a discussion about priority, too, and about people putting, well, when your priority is based on your filing date, not particularly when you put your well in, but your filing date. And so if you file an application, we'll go ahead and change the policy. That establishes your priority so that anybody that files after you, if you have two wells in close proximity, you start pumping. Whoever filed first has the better right. Okay. But these lots are big enough and spread out enough. I don't know that we're going to have that kind of a problem up there. But still, it's a principle of Utah water law that first in time is first in right.
Sure.
So we'd have to make that decision. We feel really comfortable about going this direction. This is where we're going to go, and I don't know if anybody here feels uncomfortable with us going that direction.
I'm just wondering how much water the Indian Hollow, what did you say they're projecting they're going to need? I mean, what if they start draining all the aquifers that are up in those hills, and suddenly it's like,
well,
their well stops producing? How would you say, hey, I think they're taking all the water? I mean, just as a big general kind of thought.
Yeah. They're limited to the extent of their water right, so they won't be able to exceed their water right. And one of the main jobs we have in the state engineer's office is to make sure that we aren't overdrawing a hydrologic basin. And so, and that effort started back with the Weber River Decree, which was which goes back into to 1937. And in fact, the process actually started back into the 1920s. And so even then, there was a recognition that at least on the surface, we're overdrafted. We got more people using water than there is water. And so that is what the state engineer's office exists to watch over and to make sure that we're not exceeding that and not doing that. And so there are means to make sure that the people don't exceed their water rights, and generally, for the most part, it works.
So this new subdivision, each new house or lot would get a 0.45.
Possibly. It's an interesting application because the applicant requested flexibility to either go as, you know, one by one through their houses, or to submit proof as a municipal. And so when someone submits as a municipal water right, they all they need to do is track their water usage. And so they'll have meters on their wells, and they'll track that, and they'll report to us. They have to report to our office on a yearly basis, and that's part of how we track and make sure that people stay within their water rights.
They can't take any more water than what we've evaluated the application is worth. And they can't deplete any more water from the system than they've historically done.
Yeah.
So they have to stay within those parameters.
In fact, a provision of this application, an 1885 priority date, it's not an awesome priority date. It's a moderately good one in the Weber River Decree. And so when we have water moved from the surface to an underground, we do what's called a priority cut. Because there were probably times in the history of that water right where that water right had to be cut. They couldn't divert. The river commissioner shut that water right down. And so when they moved to an underground well where that you can basically turn the well on anytime you want, then that's a very reliable source of water. And so to try and keep that enlargement from happening, we'll limit how much they can take. And so it's a very common practice on surface to underground change applications, and was applied in this change application too.
I know you didn't know the answer to this, but maybe he does. How big are what size are the lots that they're planning on putting in this?
So there's 65 lots. This is all public record. It's final plat approval, so you can get it from the county. But the lot sizes will vary from 6,000 square feet, very small, all the way up to just over an acre. The average size probably being about a third acre.
It's a pretty high density.
sort of high density. When are you breaking land?
Pardon? You're breaking ground? Yeah, that's a question we're still determining. We're trying to get our final agreement done with Deep Springs Water.
Do you know what chop will put the targeting for the well?
With who?
Indian Hollow, when you drill their new well.
A test well's been drilled, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I don't recall that well drill's report, but I can look it up. I mean, it's, you get down deep enough and it seems to be a fairly contiguous mound of volcanics, and there's no clear delineation between any of it, and it's just all, it's a big pile of basalt, basically. And so it's not, when you get into that area, it's hard to say what strat exactly, because it's just one big pile of a volcano.
Will it be in the same aquifer as the Deep Spring one, or will it be in a different, do you know that?
That I don't know. I'm not familiar with the Deep Spring.
I can't.
The Deep Spring as well is, I believe, south of 248, so I don't know if it would be in the same aquifer or not.
What was the depth, sorry?
I didn't say anything about depth. I said that the Deep Springs well is, I believe, south of Highway 248. I don't know if that would be the same aquifer or not.
Okay.
Yeah, we're quite a ways north of that.
Any other questions? And I'll look that up and see if we can get that.
So the water business we're talking about between the valley where the development is and then where Garf Ranch is, isn't that over several different water companies? There's Warm Spring, and there's Beaver Shingle Creek, and then there's Beaver Basin. Is that correct?
I'm not aware. And I guess I don't understand. Say that again. Sorry, I was a little distracted.
I think it's over three different water companies. So what water company is that new well going to be through?
It's as it sits right now, it's its own entity.
It's its own entity.
And I believe you guys are in negotiations right now with Deep Springs to basically combine systems, and you'd have two wells. Is that correct?
They already have a well.
Yeah.
We're drilling a new well, adding a new tank, and turning the infrastructure over to Deep Springs.
Okay.
To provide water service.
So it's a complete turnover to them. So they just get bigger as an entity.
Yeah, whether they choose to be a municipal water company is up to them. They wouldn't be able to do that until, I believe, the majority of our homes have connected to that system. So they have to have X number of users before they could choose to become municipal. I don't know if they're going to or if they want to. So that's a big maybe. And I don't know that it really has any merit. So.
Isn't the two water rights they own, or they're trying to get the two new exchanges or whatever, but isn't one for inside use and one for outside use?
I know we had a hearing on the change application for that, and I know that was discussed in that hearing. The one we approved already, the change application that prompted this meeting and this policy change, didn't cover all of the houses that were being proposed. And I know that was clearly stated. And so I think that's why we have the change application we have now in our office. And I think that's contemplating, you know, to cover the additional lots and I can't remember if it includes irrigation. And we could find that, but I think the intent of it is to cover a second part of it. Maybe there's an additional one that will come later to cover the remainder.
Well, I think part of us pulling our protest was that they would cover irrigation, because they tried to tell us that almost people would only use it indoor, but if people have lawns, they're going to irrigate it. So, you know, I think that was part of what we kind of worked out with them, that they would cover for irrigation on the other side.
Yeah. And if it's pursued as municipal, then the water can be used how they see fit, up to the limits of the water, the historic limits of the water,
right?
So that's kind of what we'd be expecting, I guess.
So that one exchange was surface water, and then they put that in the well.
Mm-hmm.
So then who owns that surface right now?
Well, they do. It was It was done by way of a change application, and so when someone owns a water right, state statute lets people move it around, move points of diversion, where you're taking the water, change how you're going to use it. You can go from irrigation to stock watering. You can, or, you know, there's multiple different types of uses. You can change where you're using it by statute. And so what they've said is that instead of using this water from the surface source on the land we have now, we want to take that water out of this well, and we're going to use it for houses instead. And so that was what was approved under that change application 6 months or so ago.
And the surface water just flows through.
And so now the surface water should continue on through. And they're taking water from deep down, and so that water needs to roll on by, go out into the valley and soak down into the ground and provide the water that they're going to ultimately divert or replace that water that they're ultimately going to divert. So when we look at it as a basin-wide hydrologic system, there's no net loss to the system. And that's what we seek to do when we evaluate these change applications.
So they got approval for the 2080 exchange 6 months ago, and then they put in to add another 2080 plus whatever. So, you know, they can do their 65 homes. My property does border that subdivision. I have a great well. And it was strongly suggested to us at that last meeting that we should start monitoring the depth of our well because...
The water level in your well?
Because they're going to be pulling a huge amount of water right across the fence line. And so you're saying like the water rights and stuff shouldn't affect prior water rights, but if I turn my spigot on one day and I don't...
And that's where this idea of local interference that we talked about would possibly come into play if that were to occur. And so we'd have to watch that. And I think that's where the advice was given to watch the water level in your well. And if it seems to be declining, then that might be a sign that there is some local interference. There's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to these underground aquifers. And probably even more so in the type of stratus, this fractured volcanic that we're drilling into up there. It's a little unpredictable about how it'll behave. We don't think there's cause for concern with what we're proposing here, but it's something we'll have to watch.
It'd be kind of hard to tell 65 families to start rationing your water, though, if they started to...
No, that's what I was just going to say.
Drain the aquifers.
Do you do a cease and desist, or how do you stop people from having water? That seems like a really hard decision to make if you're talking about an individual or just a small family compared to 65 homes.
Yeah, there's probably...
And their municipality, they've created their own municipal water district. How do you tell them you can't have this water?
Utah's whole system, though, is based on prior appropriation doctrine. So people who are there first, using the source first, have the right to be protected. We've just gotten a court ruling on a water system that's up by Plainview Reservoir that the company came in and developed a new well next to some surrounding wells. They put their well and they started pumping, and there were like three surrounding wells that all went down. People couldn't even get their water out of the wells. They said, hey, wait a minute. And so they came back and says, okay, well, let's work this out. We need to pump this well, so we'll supply you with the connection, provide you with water. And they did that for a few years. They said, this is costing us a lot of money to provide you with water. And they went back on their contract and said, we're not going to provide that anymore. So the people took them to court. The judge came back and said, you've interfered with the hydraulic movement of water through that groundwater resource. You pulled it to your well. You're not willing to replace that. You cannot impair because your well was there after those existing wells were there. And the court came back and told them to stop pumping their well. And that's what they did. They just said, stop pumping. They had other well sources, but they liked this one well because they wouldn't work things out with the local people. The court told them to stop pumping. I thought, well, that's interesting. The people who were defending the water company came to us and said, will you support us in appeal on this? And I said, the judge made the right decision. Because those people have to protect us. No, we're not going to join with you in an appeal on that. You'll have to fight it yourself. So there is some protection for being there. It's very important to be able to demonstrate there's impairment. Now, water levels are not guaranteed under Utah Water Law to be at any specific level. We've had some people that have come in and just tapped into the very top of an aquifer, put their pump right there, start pumping, and somebody puts a well in, and all of a sudden water drops down there, but well goes dry. But there's a famous to us case that involves Murray City, that Wayman is an individual who had a flowing well, and it just boiled into his house. They didn't have to pump or anything. He had all the water pressure he needed. Murray City comes in and drills a big well, and the water stops flowing into this guy's house. And Wayman was just ticked. He says, yeah. Don't do that to us. And so he took him to court, and the court came back and says, you know what? We can't guarantee where that water level is going to be. And he says, and if we're going to guarantee that an aquifer is full and spilling to pressurize into your house, nobody else is going to be able to use that resource, because they're going to have to keep that aquifer full and pressurized and shooting water into your home. So he says, that's just not good water law practice. You have to expect some kind of reasonable reduction in that water level so that other people can use the resource. And so, and then they went on and talked about several things in the court case. They never at one time defined what reasonable reduction was, and that, and they kind of left up to the courts in the future to determine that. The one up by Pine View Reservoir said, well, it was drying that down many feet. I mean, 20, 30 feet. The one that just took all of the water out of the well, it didn't have water. It said that's, they said, that's not reasonable. And so they awarded in favor of the individual well holders.
So how long were they in court, these different cases?
I don't know how long this one went. This was, I think the decision just came out. And so it would have been a court here. I'm sure it lasted at least a year, but it would have been just like a week in court to talk about it. But I'm sure it was at least a year to get all the data together and the studies. They had some professionals that hired hydrologists that had come in to look at water levels and long-term studies and gathering data.
That's expensive.
And yeah, and I don't think one of those professionals came cheap.
Water's not any good either.
Yeah, but if you've got a home with no water, it's really tough. You mentioned back here about somebody suggested monitoring, and why I would recommend that very heavily, to take time to just make sure you know where your water level is, because if somebody comes and you're down 100 feet to your water surface and they start pumping and it drops down to 200, goes below your, well, that doesn't seem reasonable, but if it drops 10 feet and you have your well set right at the top and drops, your well goes dry or your pump is dry because it's now just dropped, is that a reasonable reduction? I think my response would be, probably need to drop your pump down and get down into the water a little bit deeper. But some people haven't drilled very deep. And we've talked here about some 300 to 700 foot range, and if you're in the 300 foot range, you can start pumping and it goes, but your well driller recommended to you, you know, we've hit water, but you probably want to go down.
Yeah.
And that's an expensive wife's decision. I mean, it's not cheap to go down an extra 200 feet. But to have a well there in operation makes a lot of sense. So the rule kind of comes back to what's reasonable on the impairment. But we will always tell people that we don't guarantee where that water level is going to be. And it will fluctuate. In Salt Lake Valley, we set up a policy, I think it's 12 feet there, that we said, if you're going to put a well in and you start pumping, the long-term impact on surrounding wells is greater than 12 feet, then that's not a reasonable impact, and you need to come back and do some compensation. And they have opportunities under this compensation is to supply you water or cut their pumping back so they get it within the realm of where they should be. In Davis County, we've used a 15-foot number there about for long-term pumping about reasonable impacts. And so we've got some varying standards depending on the aquifer, where you are, and how tight the water is. system is. So, but I just want to mention, we want to be very careful as we move ahead with this, because we want to watch your wells, we want to hear from you about what's happening. Particularly if the bigger wells go on, they start pumping, we want to hear about that quickly, so we know what to do, so.
So would you need some type of proof to say that? I mean, if you're going to go to court that we have interference, I mean, is it your word against their word?
Oh, yeah, I think if you just say, well, I looked down there, I think that's where the water level is. You're going to have to actually take some measurements, and it's, we had an interesting well over in Park City that involved a well that Park City put in, and I'm forgetting that Doherty Spring was the spring over on the Silver Creek side. Park City turns their well on there, decided to get this new well. They turned it on 12 hours, Doherty Springs, which flowed about 5 second feet of water, stopped flowing. They turned the well off, and within 12 hours, the spring was flowing 5 second feet again. So they have measurements and stuff. Park City had to come up with an agreement to guarantee the water users downstream from Doherty Springs that they would supply them a minimum of 5 second feet through the hole here, which cost Park City a lot of money to be able to pump that just to keep the water flowing. But there was a direct impact. But there, yeah, you couldn't just say, well, I think you impacted me. You're going to have to come back and show, here's my well level, the depth of my water level is 200 feet.
And you can measure yourself and just say,
yeah, you can record it.
Yeah, you can just, and I'd keep a record of that.
Just send it to you guys, so there's a hard copy you guys have.
I would just keep it yourself, but then when you want us to know, we'll make that part of your water right file, where your water levels are. And it's just excellent information to have. People that have springs, I tell them, get measuring devices on there, keep records and show where it is, because people putting wells in may actually affect that. And you need to have evidence of what it was. You can't just say, well, I think it was this. Because the courts don't go with thoughts very often if they go with data.
I got a hypothetical. Okay. So right now, the Indian Hollow has their second exchange application in, yes?
Second change application.
The second change. So they're ready to pull, or they're going to have their date as in whenever they applied. And if you come in as a single homeowner or whatever, and you apply for a well in 6 months, you put your well in 8 months, and you've got your well date, is your priority date is after theirs, but they're 10 to 15 years before they have their 65 homes. So then, does that 65th home still have priority over yours that was 8 months later?
Yeah. So it's not when the uses, in this case the houses, were put in. By state law, it's when the water act was filed.
Okay.
And that's the key date. And
right.
Your exchange applications you have now, we have, you know, whatever priority date we have, it's the date that you came in our office and filed.
Would they have a amount of time to prove beneficial use of the second change?
They'll have to submit a proof of beneficial use too, just like everyone does.
And what would their time period on that be? Would it be 15 years before they have to get their 65 house built?
Upon first approval, we set a time period of 5 years. But there are opportunities to file for extensions, and probably some of you have filed extensions on your exchanges, and that same thing is afforded to these change applications as well.
State engineer's responsibility on reviewing extension requests is, have you been diligent in trying to develop your water, or do you have a reasonable cause for delay? And that's the statutory criteria we have to make a decision on an extension request. And we've had some people who just haven't done anything for years. And we've come back and said, okay, well, we'll let your water rights stand, but we're going to reduce your priority to the day you filed your extension request if you're not doing anything. And we do that to help protect others who have come in and already developed and used water. Sometimes we'll just reject the extension request, just saying you're not being diligent and you're trying to tie water up. And statute tells us that we're not supposed to approve applications if they're for speculation or monopolistic purposes, because you should have an immediate intent to want to put water to use. And so if you're not, then it becomes a little bit more speculative. We probably shouldn't even approve an application. It's not going to be done in a reasonable time frame. But we assume that it is, but if it turns out that it isn't, then we have these other tools to come back and say, hey, we're going to reduce priority on some of your ride, or submit proof on what you've got, and maybe we'll let the rest out, or we'll just, we'll have to figure through that. We'll just watch it. We watch every extension request that comes up. And that would be the same for each of you who have your domestic wells and your exchange applications. We'll look at that and say, what are you doing? Normally, if you've drilled the well.
Working with Summit County. Trying to get permits.
Trying to get permits to do it. And some of that is reasonable to a point. Because if Summit County isn't going to issue permits, we've had some places where the county has just come and said, we will not issue building permits in that area. And we keep seeing these repeated extension requests, where we just can't get a building permit. We say, well, you're kind of losing your feasibility here to tie this water up. You probably need to find another option, something to do something else. Because if they're not going to approve it, you need to take them to court or do something, you know, to get something going. But just sitting around not doing anything is probably not a reasonable cost for delay or due diligence on your part. So. But sometimes counties can be hard to work with. Sometimes we can be hard to work with.
I don't think there's anybody here from Summit County, so you need to say that.
So it sounds like after this 30-day process and stuff, we have to apply for another application?
Yeah. If you're one of those that was limited to 0.45 acre feet, then one of two options, and we've had a lot of discussion about priority date. There's one of two approaches. You could file a new exchange to replace the one you have, and that exchange would now include irrigation. But one drawback of that is you now have the priority date of that new filing. You know, so let's say you came in on April 1st and filed that. That's now your priority date, and you've lost the old one. So there could be an argument for keeping the one you have. And you have, I know Weaver Basin only offers contracts in 1 acre foot increments. And so all of you that have 0.45 acre feet, there's another 0.55 acre feet that you could use for 0.18 acres of irrigation, that you could file a second exchange application to use up the remainder of that contract. And so now only that part would bear the priority date of the...
I think that's what we would do, is have you maintain your original portion. I mean, there's a legal argument, too, that would come back and say a change application, whatever it changes, that's what has the junior priority. So if you take a change application and incorporates what you originally had, and add something new to it under a new change or exchange application, what you already had, there's a legal argument that was already there. That was already approved. You just incorporated into this new one. That's as far as I know, has never been challenged in court, never been tested. And then in my mind, it makes sense. You didn't really change that. That was already there. But if it were me, I would avoid having to make that legal argument.
So this form online that we can fill this out?
Yeah.
Submit it.
Yeah, we have staff in our office, and some of you I know I've met out of the office, and they can help you prepare this exchange application. We actually have a new, it's called an exchange application wizard, that on our website that you can use to prepare that exchange application on your own. And does it work with partial contracts, though? It
may not work. I'm not sure about that, yeah. Because they'll have to put in that contract number.
And it's already existing. Linked up with one exchange application, it may not work. Mm-hmm. So if you're one of those that has 1 acre foot and you've perfected your exchange application and you want to go get another one, this exchange wizard would be something that you might want to pursue. In fact, Kendall Searle down at Weaver Basin Water Conservancy District has been helping people do this actually when they come in to get their contract. He may show that to you while you're down there getting the contract all set up. If you're one of these where it's a partial contract, it might be best if you come down to our office and some of our public inquiry staff can help you with that.
Because it would be using the same contract number, but to do for the balance of the one that you have.
So we'd want to make sure that we accounted for the contracts as we're doing that, and we got people that can help you do that.
So I'm a little confused because according to your map on lot 45, you're on the title to 1 acre foot.
And I probably put my well in 1993. I have a letter that says I was limited to 0.45 for the state.
Which lot on there are you? Is it one of these lots?
I'm 45.
45, right there. We'll go back to where I list the lots, and so it was, I'm hoping it's not an error on our part in interpreting it.
We were a lot meaner back then.
I don't know. If that was the case, I apologize.
I actually have a letter from the state that says I was limited when they were doing all the limitations to 0.45.
Well, was that one of the lots that was revised later after the...
No, I don't think so.
This was in the 90s.
So you were back at the very beginning when this is going in.
Yes.
And I pulled these lots, there's a memo. There's a memo to the file that was written that I pulled these lot numbers from. I was back in high school at the time, so it's hard to say exactly what happened.
So it's not best for me to make an appointment.
1993. I don't know the date exact. I guess we can hope since we could look that up. Let's look at that. I can actually pull that up real quick.
So I'm just thinking, for me, probably best to make an appointment and come down and see you guys to get it.
Well, unfortunately, we can't rewind time at this point. If you were limited and it was done in error, I apologize, but let's fix it.
Okay. But still, if she's got a 1-acre-foot contract, there's only approved for 0.45. We can do another exchange application, or you can file another exchange to get the 0.55. And what we're telling you, under this policy, if we implement this, then you could get that additional 0.55 associated, so you'd have some outside water.
So you still have to pay the $150 to do that?
Yeah. We've got to go through and advertise and process those whole things again. And that's what the legislature has told us that we have to do with our application.
Of course, the policy is. Of course, it doesn't go through yet.
So I just confirmed on the memo, it does in fact say 45 is a 1-acre-foot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look at, see if I can find your water right. Do you happen to remember your number, E, whatever, whatever, whatever? Let's see if I can.
CD4, whatever.
But I always found that interesting that the people above me and around me had the 8-foot. Which I was surprised to find out just a couple of years ago. Because I thought we were all limited.
What's your name?
Rentz. R-E-N-T-Z.
That's what I see too, but that is, the name on that is Bernadette Church. Okay, Church?
Yes, that would
right
be me
too. Oh, right, okay.
A couple of names.
And I said this to some, but we got a lot of mail returns when we sent out the notices. If your address has not been updated on this, it would be a good thing to do. Update your address with us, because we got maybe 20 envelopes back.
Well, I got the notice for this meeting.
Okay, good.
So,
good.
But I'm just saying, you know.
This one, it's E2930, shows that it's for 1 acre feet for irrigation and domestic.
Well, I have.
Okay, so I guess I should just burn that away.
Just throw away that sheet. You need to start irrigating.
What I would do is go in and just check the database and make sure it says the 1 acre. And I would look at there will be an order approving that.
I take that back, actually. It was limited.
Does it say why?
It was all pursuant to the Garf Ranch stuff that was going on back in 1993, and And I guess all I can imagine is perhaps it was mistakenly cut when it shouldn't have been. It wasn't in accordance with that memo that, that listed which lots had which restrictions. So I don't know why.
So did the order predate the policy date?
I don't think so. So the order was September 3rd of 1993. And the policy came out on March 18th, 1993. So March to September.
And Mike, I'm going to make an executive decision here that if those applications were filed and we cut them back to 0.45 and they should have been for one as designated on our map, I think we'll do a reissued order on those and just say that they're good for one. Yeah, but if we cut them back incorrectly, it should...
You have the discretion to fix errors, and I guess we've identified an error.
I'm trying to do that.
Okay.
Mike's not here, so I can do that. Where is my deputy?
I get a request from you to do that, denoting that there was an error made and that the exchange was issued in contrary to the policy that was in place, you know, put in place at that time. And then I'll go ahead and get that prepared for you.
To do
these exchanges? Do they like appointments?
Yeah, just so that there's staff available to help.
Yeah, it's best. I mean, you can stop by.
You don't really need when we have people there, but you might have to wait well until somebody's free.
There are busy times, and there are times that we're people are out on vacations, and it seems like Mondays and Fridays, there's quite a few people, and sometimes we end up with one or two less people in the office, and so it's best to call ahead, get an appointment if you don't want a chance waiting.
Our staff's really nice. If you want to wait, you can.
I want to be real clear on the statement that I made too about this reissued order. If it's one of those blue lots and we cut them back to 0.45, we will reissue an order to take it back to one where it should have been. If you're in the purple lots that was cut back to 0.45, that was the policy. And that's what we're working on changing right now. So we're not going to come back and just change that to one. But we will fix it with one with a new.
Does anyone else here fall into that? Did we make an error on any other ones? Okay.
So should I put attention someone specific or just the Garth?
You can write an attention to me, Michael Drake. Reference your water right number, which is E2930. File jacket number is 35-9497. If that is in fact your water right now, I think Bernadette.
Yeah. And I'll pull that paperwork, but what was your last name?
Drake.
Okay.
Drake. And we can do that now, even without a policy change. You can come and do that right now.
I'm fine with that because that's identified in an area by us that would not impact those surface flaws and should have been approved for one.
So,
anything else? Yeah.
When we call up there to make an appointment, do we ask for the Division of Water Rights?
We call the Division of Water Rights and just ask for a priority to set an appointment.
This is our internet site, waterrights.utah.gov. At the bottom of it is our phone number, 538-7240. That's the number you'll want to call. And you can get our front desk staff and ask what we want them to ask.
Just to make an appointment to file an application.
And then you'll meet with one of our...
Whenever it's convenient for you to come down, just...
What if it's not convenient to come in?
It's probably never convenient because I don't know how to do that. So So whatever works best then, just let them know and they'll have somebody there to help you. So. Okay, well that's really the information we wanted to present to you this evening. We're proposing to change the policy. We're going to open up. We are still going to be very careful. We're only going to go in 1-acre-foot increments. We're going to watch what happens after. We just don't know exactly how much water is there. And we don't want to allow so much water to come up in there that everybody's going to be hurt. So we're going to watch it very carefully, but we are going to allow these to start happening with the policies.
Are there any plans to commission a study on how much water there is in the next 50-100 years?
In the next 50-100 years, there'll probably be a study. Yes.
Well, I mean, right, but looking, you know, like let's say development continues at the pace it's going. Has there been a study saying this is where we run out of water?
We are not planning a study right now, but what we are going to do is watch. We're going to watch wells, and we're going to expect feedback from well owners to let us know what's happening. If these things start to happen, one first thing we're going to do is, okay, we're done doing this. We're going to come back and look at it, and we may then, at that point, when we see a problem, work with Utah Geological Survey or the U.S. Geological Survey to come in and do an evaluation of just the canyon area itself and look at that. But right now, we are not anticipating doing that. We are not, like I mentioned, we haven't seen any problems with diminishment or impairment of rights. We haven't had any complaints filed. We haven't had any discussions of wells interfering with one another. We've got some bigger wells going in now, and so we just want to watch it just as close as we can. If we start seeing some things, then we will try to get a study done.
And this is like some areas we have. This is an area where you go a little bit further, you're up over into Wasatch County in a completely different drainage, the Provo River drainage. And it's some of these areas where we've started to have a few of these issues, the top of the basin areas. Your exchanges are based on replacement water out of more than likely Rockport Reservoir. And you guys happen to be above it. And so it makes it kind of an odd thing for water released downstream of you to make up for the water you're taking above it. So it's an accounting thing that has to be done. Sometimes that accounting doesn't quite work. And so it's something we're very cautious of in these areas where we're above the replacement reservoir. We've had a few of them that have gone a little sour, have gotten a little challenging, and it's something that we're watching in all of these different areas, and this happens to be one of them. And it's not just this development only, it's, you know, the kind of the rim as you go around this basin are areas where you could have problems arise. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for being here, for your questions and interest in this. So we see an opportunity to open things up and help a little bit, and we want to take it. So
okay,
let us know of your concerns in the next 30 days.
Do you have to have anything?